We'd go out digging up witchetty grub or looking for a goanna, cooking up the mussels freshly in the billy can. Brings back memories pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's certainly good to come back to lots and lots of fresh green produce and just have vegetables galore.
You're listening to The Late Lunch on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
Hello, my name is Marie Yulu and I'll be keeping you company on Late Lunch today. It's time to dive deep into Darwin's rich history with Dungalubba siblings Denise and Tibby Quoll. Denise and older brother Tibby are Larrakia senior elders who have many fond memories of growing up in Old Darwin, from fishing, hunting, to memories of camping by the shores of Edina Beach right in the heart of Darwin. Of course, they've witnessed quite a bit of change since those old days of growing up at Perup Camp in the old Sydney Williams huts. Though the streets may not be the same, they continue to create new memories through the new streets of Darwin. This time, as a 30-metre-long mural on the side of the ABC building on Bennett Street, which will highlight some of Larrakia's deep and spiritual connections to Darwin. Hello, Tibby and Denise.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. It's good to have you guys here. And we're here because very soon you are going to be creating a mural on the side of the ABC building. It's going to become your canvas, Denise. Can I just get a feeling of what that feels like to be able to put your culture and things that really represent you on a big piece of wall right in the middle of Darwin where people can see it?
Yeah, it's a proud moment in time. It's representing our belonging to Darwin, where we're born, how we're connected to this place through our ancestors, through family connections, and showing talking about our way of life from being born here till the present day.
So, Denise, you're the artist that's been chosen to paint this mural, and your older brother Tibby is your cultural advisor in all of this. I wanted to go back a bit because you're both from Darwin. I'm just wondering about what Darwin might have looked like back when you were young, back when you were kids. What was that like?
Well, it's sort of like all cleaned up now. Like you go back to the days where it's all dusty and not as many cars and the streets, all the streets are all paved now, and we used to just mostly getting around Darwin, we just walked everywhere. And to get to even faraway places, we could always make our own path to where we went to. We'd have our own personal, like, beaten tracks everywhere, shortcuts. Mm-hmm. So to get somewhere these days, it's all these footpaths and
bitumen
roads now. Whereas it seems to us now, the difference today is that it seems longer to get there than how we used to live before, where we walked everywhere and we didn't have to go all the way around to places. We would just cut through, we'd have to scramble through, walk through bushes, over rail lines. Mm. And always had to, even though we walked all along the rail lines going into town, all the shortcuts and coming at the cross there with the 1 mile with the dam. It was easier and when you look at everything now and you compare to then, everything was sort of more relaxed. There was more bird life. It was more green. It's noisier now. Things are faster. Life is faster, and all the way into town, you can always stop somewhere and drop into someone's place and you could sit down there and there's no time set. You could sit down there for 2 or 3 hours and then you move on, you go somewhere else. You can end up in town somewhere. You can end up down the wharf. You know, you don't always, there's no really hard planning. Like today, you got to plan to go everywhere, to get buses. You got to plan to drive somewhere. And like today, everything is different. Like as we're sitting down here today, who would have thought I'd be sitting down here today painting a big mural on the ABC building?
And I imagine this part of Darwin would have been quite undeveloped too. There would have been a lot of maybe bushlands. There may have been
dirt roads. Old corrugated shops and all the old cafes and stuff.
And whereabouts did your family live?
We lived down right at the end of Prep Camp, at the tip of the gully. We could easily walk from there down through the bushes.
Yeah, you go down West Australia Street.
We lived down the end of West Australia Street, right at the end. That's going towards...
Mary Street. It's Mary Street.
Mary Street. Right. It was the last hut. Yeah. So if there wasn't all bush there, you could actually see Dinah Beach from there.
And you come from a rather, you know, big family. You had five siblings. There was your mum and dad. Walk me through what a day would have been like in the Quoll House, in your house.
My mum used to do a lot of sewing, and she used to like, you know, make little table mats and with coloured satin weaving and knitting. She used to make those sorts of things. And my dad used to just leg up and listen to the radio. And us boys would be gone. We'd be down a beach somewhere or in the bush somewhere.
What would you be doing, Denise?
I'm probably on the push bike somewhere. I didn't own one. So I used to, my brothers all had bikes, but they were men's bikes. And if they'd leave them at home, I'd go pick it up and I'd put one leg through the... through the frame and the other and ride it like that everywhere because I couldn't, it was too big to put my leg over. And they had those old-fashioned handlebars where they went straight down those days, like racing handlebars. Yeah, and some of them didn't have brakes. They'd like just kept going and they were those hard spikes on them. So everywhere where we went, I don't know, my feet just got so used to it from wearing bare feet everywhere. We just didn't have any... shoes.
Did you guys do most of your walking barefoot?
Yeah. All barefoot.
All barefoot.
We'd go to school barefoot.
Yeah.
Everywhere barefoot.
Barefoot down shortcuts and...
Yeah. And living in the bush, playing in the bush. That was our playground, the bush.
Mm.
It had everything we needed, like food supply and the games we played. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably.
And we always had a shanghai.
Was that to get your food?
Get food, yeah. Birds, you know.
Oh, what sort of birds did you normally get?
Oh, dubs and pigeons and Charlie Bookers, we used to call them Charlie Bookers, and parrots. Mm.
Little peewee birds.
Peewees, and we'd light fires to bring all the peewees and sparrows circle around because they sit together, you know, in the line.
Yeah.
Sparrows, they all sit together like that, so easy target.
Yeah.
There was a special place you would often go on the weekends. Can you tell me about that?
Oh, yeah, we go to Dinah Beach, and, you know, there's five kids and mum, dad, and some will be carrying some swag and another one carrying milk tins of, you know, for willy can, and we'd take along probably a throw net or something like that, or a spear or crab thing, wine for crabs, and head to Dinah Beach and...
Yeah.
And make a camp there and probably stay there for a day or two or Monday or whatever. Get fish and cockles and mussels and, yeah, there was the rough cockles and smooth cockles. And there's another one with like a pearl shell. There was, we used to call them scallops. But anyway, they had another proper name. So we had, our life was more or less hunting, you know. Come weekends, fishing, yeah.
So it was a special hunting place.
Yeah, it was hard to imagine when you think about it now, of going like we did then, even just to swim down there.
Mm.
You know, go in the water and swim down there right near the mangroves when the tide would come straight up, eh?
Mm.
And you can still sort of feel it and see it now with all that, when that tide went out, and go digging up for cockles and stuff.
Yeah, special place it was for us, yeah, growing up there on Dinah Beach.
Mm. You mentioned when you were at Dinah Beach, they used to camp under a big tree down there. What was that like?
Oh, that tree was It was
special place, eh?
Yeah, just a beautiful, I can still remember it now, beautiful big tree. It came out, came straight out, and it was just thick. We should just sleep under it, just stay under that area.
Mm.
Because all the other areas, like when we were small, it looked like all that area, like a big red cliff area, eh? Mm. Where it's all taken down now, like all shaved down away.
What was it like sleeping down there?
It was probably normal to us, you know, like we...
Probably better down there, felt better sleeping down there than back in the...
Home, yeah.
At home, yeah.
Because you just wake up and just have a cup of tea and make breakfast and... leave your mum and dad there and just go into the mangroves, just searching for food or into the bush.
Yeah, you're not so confined.
Mm.
Everything's wide open.
It sounded like there was also a sense of trust from your parents that they let you go and you were going to be fine.
Yeah.
We just go and do what we want. Sometimes we used to go back to the camp and then we'd ask, oh, where's so-and-so? Or go look for that person, then you go look for him.
Yeah, there was no thing, there was no, like, rule for coming back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure, like these days, they say, oh, come back. You know, you say to your kids, come back as soon as that street light comes on or before it comes on. But not in those days, we just went. And because we knew when to come home, Mum never sort of gave us a rule, eh? Because we had family living all around the place anyway.
It sounds like you have some special memories and... Your mum and dad must have been a big part of those memories. What do you remember about your mum and dad? You know, some of your fondest memories of your parents.
Well, I remember when we used to go down to Mendel Beach with mum and dad and used to go down with my uncles. And that was when Uncle Mickey, Sabu, he had a big canoe. And dad and the men would go out. And me and Mum would stay back and have the fire going all night. And they went out fishing night time.
Yeah, she did a lot of knitting too. She could make baskets with cotton wool, cotton wool baskets and purse. She used to make purses. Yeah.
So she was a bit creative.
Yeah, made mats. She made heaps of things with just wool, you know.
And I guess that's where you get your creativity from, perhaps, Denise.
Yeah.
And we talked about your mum. You said earlier, you said your dad listened to the radio a lot.
Mm.
Was there any particular things he would listen to or songs you remember?
Oh, you know, they used to have serials in them days, stories. And then, you know, on those hours, you know, you got to be quiet and get out of the house.
Yeah, on the road, yeah. There was a lot of serials, especially in the afternoon.
Music.
Yeah, we'd wait for Tarzan to come on.
In the afternoon, yeah, kids show. Five o'clock.
You'd hear
kids
that
show.
Sound. What's that?
Oh.
Tarzan, they say, now we're Tarzan.
And all the kids down the road.
Run up there and sit down in the radio and wait for the serial of Tarzan to come on. And he's got his scream the way he screams, and everyone will copy him. You know how he makes that shout?
Yes. Memories of the radio.
Yeah.
Tarzan, who would have thought?
Yeah.
You're listening to Late Lunch on ABC Radio Darwin and across the Northern Territory. Marie Yulu with you, and your guest today, your special guest today, is Dungalubba siblings Denise and Tibby Quoll. Denise Quoll is an artist, and Tibby's her older brother. He's the cultural advisor. They're embarking on a big project. They are going to paint the side of the ABC building on Bennett Street. And you will see a beautiful mural soon go up in that space. Denise, we spoke about your childhood now and what that's been like. You've seen Darwin change a whole lot. What are those changes that you noticed the most?
Well, all the more people, more cars, mostly all the greens, all the trees and that, miss all the dusty roads. Everything seems to be in the way of everything that used to be, that never used to be there before. Like you got to sort of make an effort to get anywhere these days, like to get to the beach.
Oh, everybody has to walk everywhere.
Yeah, there's rules now. There's rules for fishing and camping. Even though you sort of live in one place and you share that with everyone else, but because of the change today, it's like your home. It was your home was like all of Darwin.
Mm.
Now it seemed to have shrunk. Even though I loved Darwin,
it's grown.
It's just grown, and at a fast pace.
You still feel those connections, though, don't you?
Oh, strongly, yeah.
Mm. Regardless of things that develop, high-rise buildings come, fast pace. How do you still find those spaces and places to go? Because I can imagine there's so much rush and busyness now compared to the old days.
Mm. Well, we go to the markets in Metal Beach, but before we used to swim there now. Like today, we hardly ever get to swim in Metal Beach. It was part of our playground. And next door was their parks and gardens where we spent many days and weekends there. All the boys and probably a lot of the girls too would always go to the gardens and muck around down there. Always carry football with us and played a lot of football in the gardens there. And Shanghai's for food.
Football in Shanghai.
Football in Shanghai.
Yeah, even as us girls too, we'd be carrying Shanghai's too.
Would you get birds too?
We get down the gardens there and there's that big Kuno plum tree where they got the new...
Kuno plum.
Where they got the new botanical gardens
building
there. There used to be a big Kuno tree there with all the plums. And we used to come all the way across there through St. John's College up there and come down that hill past the dump.
Old
and everyone'd say, head over there to that plum tree and get more ammunition.
Because it's hard as rock, eh? Kuno
plums.
Tree.
Yeah. You know, little...
Use them good for Shanghai.
Sour little plums.
Yeah.
Otherwise we'd use marbles.
Talking about those connections to place, I've been referring to you as being Dungalubba.
Hmm.
What does that mean, being a Dungalubba woman, Dungalubba man? What does that mean?
Well, Dungalubba is the saltwater crocodile. As a clan, that's our totem for our clan group, and that's what it is, Dungalubba. We are the Dungalubba people.
How many families are in the Dungalubba?
There's like the Bacho families, and then there's the Secretary families, and there's the Singh families. They're the remnants of the whole clan group. In other words, in a tribal situation in Aboriginal society, you have different clan groups, and in our lifetime, and that's all been extinguished, and we are the surviving clan group. That's how it is today. We still practice all the same cultural things. We are all together as one clan group, and we still all look out for each other.
As well as the Dungalubba clan group, you guys also have a family totem on your own. What's that family totem?
Oh, it's the Brahmani kite.
Brahmani kite.
Called Nangaji Nangaji.
Say that again.
Nangaji Nangaji Ba.
Nangaji Nangaji Ba.
Mm. It's you see it mainly cruising along the coastline. We sing out to it, call out to it, and it sort of breezes, floats around where we are. And when I first took my children out a day out and like over in Mandurah, I was a do fishing, and so I used to make them stand up on top of the beach somewhere and hold the fish in the air. Up. They used to come down, Nangaji Bas used to come down, get the fish out of their hands.
Wow.
And at very young age too, they...
Were they scared?
they were surprised, but they freaked out, but they managed, and they still do it today.
Yeah. Wow. So there's that really special connection with that Brahmani.
Yeah, because it gives us a sign of that our spiritual connection, and we feel, makes us happy and feel good,
It's a calming feeling that you're being looked after.
Oh, that sounds beautiful.
Mm. You feel safe.
Mm. Denise, I've been wanting to ask you, because you are the artist you're about to paint the mural on the side of the ABC building. You're a well-known Larrakia artist, and recently we've seen some of your large-scale public murals that you've created on a range of different things like the water tank located on Berrimah Road at East Arm. I'm just wondering, where did it all start? Where are your first memories of painting for the first time?
I used to do a lot of painting at home, but with my uncle, we'd be just sitting down, because I had no other like paints we have today. All the other kids had, they have all their paperwork and inspiring and just draw like all your families. And
what were some of your favourite things to draw or paint?
Oh, mainly outside, like trees and family, beaches, where we went, where we stayed.
I'm just thinking about the mural now. Some of the inspiration that comes from your culture and your childhood growing up, is this what we're going to see on the mural?
Yeah, it's like representing, like a welcoming. I've got the painting the Brahmani kite, Dungalaba, and Gakinga, the magpie goose, and the two big symbols, the separated, the men on one side and the women. So it's like a women's area sitting down, doing women's business on one side and the men.
Can you tell me, I guess, the significance of those particular things that you chose to put on the wall?
Yeah, it's do with, like, it's all connected with the men and the women. Like, it could be hunting, sitting down, and
men and women both do arts in both circles, and then you know, having men having strong relationships and, you know, about day to day business, and so as a woman, when they sit down, they have a good talk about some things, and it's a natural sort of way of lifestyles being brought into discussions so that they can learn of each other and whatever.
Yeah, like two private areas, the women sitting down, you know, go out and do their hunting and gathering, and they like sitting down together. And
it's customary that men do their hunting and women do their, and what they do, yeah. And it's also a customary relationship that they separate, have two different groups and two different ways of lifestyle, you know, that Aboriginals have.
So the Brahmani kite is your family totem. The crocodile is the clan group, which is the Dungalaba. And so who does the magpie goose, where does the magpie goose sit in this story?
Well, that's to do with, at this time, with the
season.
The season, the change of seasons, the new life.
As a cultural advisor, Tibby, what's that been like? What have you been offering your little sister?
Probably a lot. Yeah, that's in the art itself, the painting itself, and that the relationships of, you know, family relationships, and how family recognises their activities and recognising what roles they have in their customs, you know.
I love it because it reminds me that we're bringing the old ways from your culture into the new, onto this new wall, into this new city that you've seen change over the years. And that's really quite significant, bringing like the old into the new. And as it's quite an entrance into the city, lots of new people coming into Darwin will get to view it and see it. And a lot of locals will get to see it. What do you hope that the people that view it, what do you hope that they get out of it?
Well, you can see like we live in a modern world today, and having a story of our lifestyle and customs that people would rather respect and to relate to that, to the stories of the art, and see the significance of Aboriginal people in a city life.
Acknowledging the
cultural.
Yeah, like the bird and the crocodile we've got up, I'll have on the mural. That's acknowledging.
Although they live in a modern world, our culture is still there.
You are listening to Late Lunch with Marie Yulu on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory. I've had two special guests in the studio today, your guests actually, the Dungalaba siblings, Denise and Tibby Quoll, who are from Darwin. They are residents from Darwin, lived here all their lives, and generations before them, they are senior traditional elders of Larrakia country. And you've been hearing their stories, and you've been hearing about the mural that they're about to undertake on the side of the ABC building on Bennett Street. Denise, you've been an artist since you were sitting down with your uncle all those years ago. I'm just wondering, like, the importance of art to you personally. What is the importance for you? What drives you?
Oh, it's just, yeah, it's just like, it's a whole part of me.
Life.
Heart, you know, I feel it. Everywhere I go, I walk, I look at something, no matter what colour, shape, on the sky, everywhere. Yeah, you can feel it all around you all the time.
What is that feeling like?
It's a really beautiful feeling, you know, like it just there's so much there stored up, and especially when you get on the beach, you just all these ideas. There's so much to create.
Story behind everything.
And yeah, stories behind everything. And like when I first started, you just get this excitement to do art that you try to do a lot of things at once, a lot of tasks, and eventually they all pile up. Yeah, you just get a bit carried away. I get a bit carried away sometimes. Yeah, I do my own personal murals. I've got murals on my front fence that I just sat down one day out of the blue, and I just cut up these shade cloths, 2 metres with bush tucker and big cockatoo, probably about a metre high. And then I've got a crocodile and magpie geese, and I've got metal cut-out frames of turtles and barramundi on the front fence. You know, you sort of get that way as an artist. You look at everything. You just want to, like when I first started with doing large-scale murals, you just look around and you just like to, you spot buildings anywhere and you just want to go in there and just paint it from a small, very tiny to now it's unreal now that, you know, starting to do these big murals with sharing it with a lot of other artists.
And sharing it with the whole of Darwin
as
well and, you know, beyond. What I love about the art and the something that doesn't change our people, Aboriginal people, is that art is our way of telling stories. And because our artwork wasn't necessarily written down, you know, in books, we have a way of sharing it orally, which is primarily how we did it through our songs and our stories, but also through our artwork. And it's quite a significant contribution that you guys are doing.
Yeah, like sharing your art, like when I first started to think about what I'm doing, and because of the change over time and how to paint or how to draw, how to sketch, you've got all these different ideas. But my idea came back to being born here and showing culture and personal stuff about how I feel for the family and sharing it with the community. It's like a big thing for me.
And your stories, where we may not have been able to find them so easily, we're now, as we arrive in Darwin, be able to view some of the most significant symbols of your Dungalaba tribe. It's really special, and it's giving me goosebumps. I can't wait to see it. And thank you for joining me today, Tibby and Denise. It's been wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Dungalaba artist Denise Kwol and older brother Tibby Kwol. You've been hearing about their carefree, happy childhood in Darwin and the vast changes they've seen since. You would have also heard about Denise and a major project she's about to embark on that will see her art displayed across the side of the ABC building on Bennett Street, right in the heart of Darwin.